Full Circle by Edith Wharton. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2013. Part 4. The deluge began punctually on the Thursday, and Visey, arriving as punctually, had an impressive pile of letters to attack. Betton, on his way to the park for a ride, came into the library, smoking the cigarette of indolence, to look over his secretary's shoulder. "How many of 'em? 20? Good Lord, it's going to be worse than diadems. I've just had my first quiet breakfast in 2 years. Time to read the papers and loaf. How I used to dread the sight of my letterbox. Now I shan't know I have one." He leaned over Visey's chair, and the secretary handed him a letter. "Here's rather an exceptional one. Lady, evidently. I thought you might want to answer it yourself." "Exceptional?" Betton ran over the mauve pages and tossed them down. "Why, my dear man, I get hundreds like that. You'll have to be pretty short with her, or she'll send her photograph." He clapped Visey on the shoulder and turned away, humming a tune. "Stay to luncheon?" he called back gaily from the threshold. After luncheon, Visey insisted on showing a few of his answers to the first batch of letters. "If I've struck the note, I won't bother you again," he urged, and Betton groaningly consented. "My dear fellow, they're beautiful. Too beautiful. I'll be let in for a correspondence with every one of these people." Visey, at this, meditated for a while above a blank sheet. "All right. How's this?" he said, after another interval of rapid writing. Betton glanced over the page. "By George, by George! Won't she see it?" he exulted, between fear and rapture. "It's wonderful how little people see," said Visey reassuringly. The letters continued to pour in for several weeks after the appearance of abundance. For 5 or 6 blissful days, Betton did not even have his mail brought to him, trusting to Visey to single out his personal correspondence and to deal with the rest according to their agreement. During those days, he luxuriated in a sense of wild and lawless freedom. Then, gradually, he began to feel the need of fresh restraints to break, and learned that the zest of liberty lies in the escape from specific obligations. At first, he was conscious only of a vague hunger, but in time, the craving resolved into a shamefaced desire to see his letters. "After all, I hated them only because I had to answer them." And he told Visey carelessly that he wished all his letters submitted to him before the secretary answered them. At first, he pushed aside those beginning, "I have just laid down abundance after a third reading," or, "Every day for the last month, I've been telephoning my bookseller to know when your novel will be out." But little by little, the freshness of his interest revived, and even this stereotyped homage began to arrest his eye. At last a day came when he read all the letters, from the first word to the last, as he had done when Diadems and Faggots appeared. It was really a pleasure to read them, now that he was relieved of the burden of replying. His new relation to his correspondence had the glow of a love affair, unchilled by the contingency of marriage. One day, it struck him that the letters were coming in more slowly and in smaller numbers. Certainly there had been more of a rush when Diadems and Faggots came out. Betton began to wonder if Visey were exercising an unauthorized discrimination and keeping back the communications he deemed least important. This sudden conjecture carried the novelist straight to his library, where he found Vizy bending over the writing table with his usual inscrutable pale smile. But once there, Benton hardly knew how to frame his question and blundered into an enquiry for a missing invitation.
"There's a note, a personal note, I ought to have had this morning. Sure you haven't kept it back by mistake among the others?"
Vizy laid down his pen.
"The others? But I never keep back any."
Benton had foreseen the answer.
"Not even the worst twaddle about my book?"
he suggested lightly, pushing the papers about.
"Nothing. I understood you wanted to go over them all first."
"Well, perhaps it's safer," Benton conceded, as if the idea were new to him. With an embarrassed hand, he continued to turn over the letters at Vizy's elbow.
"Those are yesterday's," said the secretary. "Here are today's," he added, pointing to a meager trio.
"Only these." Benton took them and looked them over lingeringly.
"I don't see what the deuce that chap means about the first part of abundance, certainly justifying the title. Do you?"
Vizy was silent, and the novelist continued irritably.
"Damn cheek, his writing. If he doesn't like the book, who cares what he thinks about it anyhow?"
And his morning ride was embittered by the discovery that it was unexpectedly disagreeable to have Vizy read any letters which did not express unqualified praise of his books. He began to fancy there was a latent rancor, a kind of baffled sneer under Vizy's manner, and he decided to return to the practice of having his mail brought straight to his room. In that way, he could edit the letters before his secretary saw them. Vizy made no comment on the change, and Benton was reduced to wondering whether his imperturbable composure were the mask of complete indifference or of a watchful jealousy. The latter view being more agreeable to his employer's self-esteem, the next step was to conclude that Vizy had not forgotten the episode of the lifted lamp, and would naturally take a vindictive joy in any unfavorable judgments passed on his rival's work. This did not simplify the situation, for there was no denying that unfavorable criticisms preponderated in Benton's correspondence.
Abundance was neither meeting with the unrestricted welcome of diadems and faggots, nor enjoying the alternative of an animated controversy. It was simply found dull, and its readers said so in language not too tactfully tempered by regretful comparisons with its predecessor. To withhold unfavorable comments from Vizy was, therefore, to make it appear that correspondence about the book had died out, and its author, mindful of his unguarded predictions, found this even more embarrassing. The simplest solution would be to get rid of Vizy. And to this end, Benton began to address his energies.
One evening, finding himself unexpectedly disengaged, he asked Vizy to dine. It had occurred to him that, in the course of an after-dinner chat, he might delicately hint his feeling that the work he had offered his friend was unworthy of so accomplished a hand. Vizy surprised him by a momentary hesitation.
"I may not have time to dress."
Benton stared.
"What's the odds? We'll dine here, and as late as you like."
Vizy thanked him, and appeared punctually at 8, in all the shabbiness of his daily wear. He looked paler and more shyly truculent than usual, and Benton, from the height of his florid stature, said to himself, with the sudden professional instinct for type,
"He might be an agent of something, a chap who carries deadly secrets."